Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, I hope Fest has been easy and meaningful for everyone. This is my trick to make it a little bit shorter of a day by giving a shiur afterwards, so I hope you'll make it through as I try to stand here in this last burst of energy as we get to the last bit of the day. Today's shiur is based on the writings of my Rosh Hashiva, the Tzal Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldberg, who was Rosh Hashiva in Keren B'Yavne. He was, when I arrived in Keren B'Yavne, was the first year that he was not serving as the Rosh Hashiva. We had a new Rosh Hashiva of Mordechai Greenberg, who is retiring now. It just shows how long it's been since I've been in Eretz Yisrael. The Rosh Hashiva was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he was a Baki in Medrash. He was an expert when it came to Medrash, to reading Medrash, to understanding Medrash, and to teaching Medrash, not as something that someone says to the Shabbos table. No, there's a Medrash that says he would deal with it as a piece of Gemara, every line, every word, to understand what it was that Chazal were trying to convey through their messages, through their parables, through their statements. And I heard him speak live twice, only two times. He passed away in Adar of my first year, while I was in the yeshiva. I heard him speak once in his home in Yerushalayim, sitting around a dining room table with about eight other boys, and once in yeshiva Chanukah time, and I can say that I understood not a word from either talk. Just nothing. He was such an imposing figure, and he spoke with such presence. It was so intimidating, simply being in the presence of such greatness. And it was really one of the only times in my life having experienced that, where you could not listen because of the presence of the person in whom you sat. But that was the reality. I just, not a word. Didn't understand a word that he said. But I consider myself a Talmud of his nonetheless, through his Sfarim. After he died, his sons-in-law and a Talmud of his, a student of his, wrote up his sichot, his shmuzin into different svarim. They're very, very flowery, but they are magnificent, and I consider myself a student of his through his svarim, literally because he has taught me whatever I know about Medrash has been through his writings. And I'd like to share some of that with you this afternoon. So let us get started, because what we'll talk about is relevant both to the parsha that we read yesterday as well as to the time period that we are beginning today. So let's start with a medrash, and we'll do a little bit of background. The first thing that we read in the beginning of yesterday's parsha, Balak hires Bilam to come and to curse the Jewish people. His message to him is as follows. We're going to go back over some background, but I'm going to jump into the middle, and then we'll circle back around. He says to him, he says to Bilam, please come, curse for me this people. Ki atzum hu mimeni, they are stronger than I. Ulai uchal nakebo, maybe I will be able to strike them. I'm reading off of source number one. There's no English on these, as you notice, but we'll be translating everything. The agarshenu min ha'aretz. And what's my goal? I will be able to kick them off of the land. The agarshenu min ha'aretz legaresh means literally to divorce or to expel. Min ha'aretz. So Boaz says to Bilam, come with me, curse these people, maybe I'll be able to strike them and expel them from the land. Ki yodati eis asher tivarach nuvarach eis asher tuar yuar. I know that you have that power. Whoever you curse will be cursed, whoever you bless will be blessed. And that's what he hires him for. Because I'll say a very fascinating thing on this. Vagarshenu min ha'aretz, I will expel them, push them out from the land. Source number two says the Medrash, lo hayam evakesh balak ela ligarsham. He only desires to kick them out, shelo yichnesu la'aretz, so that they don't enter into Eretz Yisrael. That was his goal. So that Chazal see in his pasuk what his real agenda was, not just to free himself from this people called Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael, that are covering the land, but I want to stop them from getting into Eretz Yisrael. That was his goal. This people can't make it in. So the questions that we would have would then be, where do Chazal see this? And why would it be true that that's Balak's goal? That his goal is specifically that they don't enter into Eretz Yisrael. So let's start with, where would this come from? So it comes possibly from, if you begin, you don't have a chumash in front of you, but the pasuk right before Parshas Balak, the last pasuk in Parshas Chukas, which we read now a week and a day ago, after describing the war of Sichon and Og, Klal Yisrael goes to war with two of the nations surrounding the land of Eretz Yisrael before they enter in. The very last pasuk in Parshas Chukah says, "Vayisu b'nei Yisrael," the Jewish people traveled, "Vayachanu be'arvos Moab." they encamped in the plains of Moab, Me'ever Liardein Yerecho, on the bank of the Jordan, opposite Yerecho. Very last pasuk from last week's parsha. Jewish people are in the Arvos Moab, the plains of Moab, on the banks of the Jordan River, right opposite Yerecho. Now we probably read that and you skipped it over, you didn't pay attention, but now that you stop and you hear that, well, what's the first thing that you think about when you hear that the Jewish people are encamped in the plains of Moab, right at the Jordan River, right opposite the city of Yerecho? We're done. That's it. The next stop is Yerecho, which is indeed the next stop. We're going to read about Parshas Pinchas, and then we're going to go through Matos Masej, detailing all of the travels that we did, and then all of Sefer Tzvarim is a couple of weeks of speeches from Moshe Rabbeinu while we're ready. We're finished. Klal Yisrael has finished its journey down on the banks of the Jordan River, ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Are they in any way planning on attacking Moab, the nation that Balak is the king over? Absolutely not. We, in fact, the Torah says specifically, Lo Tizgarabam, you are not allowed to instigate, incite them, you're not allowed to wage war with them. We're finished. We are on the plains of Moab, but we're not in the city, we're not ready for war, there's no military movement, there's nothing about our camp that would say to the king of Moab, this people is about to attack me. In fact, they're actually facing the other way. They're ready to go into the Jordan. They got a few weeks left of some speeches from Moshe Rabbeinu, and we're ready to go in, and we are specifically commanded not to attack this nation. And that's the last pasuk from last week's parsha. And the very next pasuk is, Balak sees this nation, and he hires Bilam and says, this is a disaster for me. These people, they are just lapping up all of the earth like a cow, like the oxen fill the earth, licking up all the greenery. I have to destroy them. Va'agarshenu min ha'aretz. And expel them from the land. He doesn't say, Va'agarshenu min artsi, from my land. He says, Agarshenu min ha'aretz. And make sure that they don't end up in the land. Say Chazal, Balak had an agenda. Balak had an agenda. These people, they're not attacking him, they're not threatening him. They don't want to threaten him. But he doesn't want them to get to the Aretz. Therefore, as we started, Lo Haya Mevakesh Ela Ligarshim Shlo Yichnesu Lo Aretz. His agenda was, this people can't get to that land. Why? So the Shashiva used to explain this based on another Medrash, another several Medrashim we'll get through. Third one on your sheet says as follows. Another Medrash related to yesterday's Parsha. Bilam, as we know, was the official prophet of the nations of the world. He was their guy, their equivalent of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Chazal therefore record a number of conversations which took place between Bilam and the nations of the world. Now, whether or not they literally took place as a conversation, this is what Chazal understood is the dialogue, what the nations of the world represent and what Bilam represents. And Chazal say as follows, on yesterday's parsha, Amru umo sa'olam lebilam, the nations of the world say to Bilam, Lama lo amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael, excuse me, Lama amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael, sheyiu makriven lo karbanos. Why is it that Hashem desires from the Jewish people that they should bring karbanos to Him? Why is it that the Jews were asked to bring these offering sacrifices, karbanos? Vilanu lo amar klum. And us, nothing. We're not required to bring karbanos like they are. Why is that, asked the nations of the world to Bilam? What did they do? What's so special about this nation that they get to bring karbanos and we don't? Amar lahem Bilam. Bilam responds to them, HaKarbanos einam ela shalom. Karbanos represent, or are, peace. Karbanos are peace. Umi shekibel es haTorah sheksuvin ba, the nation that accepted the Torah, that have Karbanos written in it, tzarech sheyakriv Karbanos, they have to bring Karbanos. Atem, you, he says to the nations of the world, mitchila pasaltem osa, you puzzled the Torah, you disqualified it, you said we don't want it. And now, after disqualifying the Torah and saying that you don't want it, now you're going to say, well, we want to bring karbanos? No way. He who accepted the Torah brings a karban. As the pasuk says, Hashem will give strength to his nation. Hashem will bless his people with peace. There is a fundamental problem with this Medrash. Medrash says, Nations of the world say to Bilaam, hey, we want to bring Karbanos. Why don't we get to do that? Bilaam says, well, you didn't accept the Torah. Except there's a gap here, because what was Bilaam's actual first response? What are Karbanos? Karbanos are peace. So if the Medrash were to flow, it should have gone into conversation something like this. Hey Bilaam, how come we don't get to bring Karbanos? Bilaam would say, well, Karbanos are peace. Therefore the nation of peace brings Karbanos. You're not a nation of peace. You can't bring Karbanos. Or the conversation could have gone like, hey Bilaam, how come we don't bring Karbanos? Karbanos are only for the Torah people. You're not a Torah people. But how does the conversation actually go? Karbanos are peace. And only the nation that accepts the Torah brings Karbanos. Wait a minute, that's not a full sentence. That doesn't flow. You started with a nation, Karbanos are peace. So tell me that I'm not a peaceful people. But you didn't say that. You said I didn't accept the Torah. Tell them, what must be going on over here? There must be some connection between Torah and peace. Which is not an obvious one. That somehow, when Bilaam says, to bring a Karbanos, you have to be a nation of peace. And being a nation of peace is somehow tied into accepting the Torah. If you don't accept the Torah, you're not a nation of peace, and therefore you can't bring a Karbanos. Let's understand this. Says the Rosh Hashiva, can a guy, a non-Jew, actually bring a Karbanos? So of course he can. Well, there are actually three different types of Karbanos, three different categories of Karbanos. One carbon is called the carbon ola. What do we do with the carbon ola? Burn it completely. There's another type of carbon that's called the carbon chatos, which represents the type of carbon. Who eats from the carbon chatos? The Kohen, but not the Jew who brings it. The Jew brings it, the Mizbeach gets part of it is burned, part of it goes to the Kohen, and the Jew, he watches. And then you have what's called the carbon shlamim. And what happens to the carbon shlamim? Everybody gets a piece. The Mizbeach has a piece that's burnt, the Kohen gets a piece, and the Jew who brings it also gets a piece. And Chazal refers to that as shalom, and makes shalom between everybody. What is shalom? Shalom is a peace, like Oseh Shalom Bimroma. He who makes peace on high. If you have a classroom, a preschool classroom, and you have a child playing in this corner over here with blocks, and a child playing over there with dolls, and you're the teacher, and you walk in, and you say, ha, great. Do you have peace in the classroom? Well, you don't have fighting because you have two kids on opposite sides of the room playing with their toys. So it is peaceful. We haven't made peace in this classroom. We just have two children in opposite corners doing their thing, not bothering each other. That's not making peace. Making peace would be figuring out how to take those two children and get them to play together. Peace is more than the absence of discord, but actually taking disparate pieces and putting them together. Oseh shalom bimromov. You makes peace. You have to make peace. It's not just the absence of, we're talking about shalom bayis. Shalom bayis isn't a husband and a wife in a home in their separate corners not fighting with each other. That's not shalom bayis. That's a lack of fighting. That's great. We should always have a lack of fighting. Shalom bayis is where you've taken two different people, different needs, different wants. Not only are they different, like one's a man and one's a woman, and you put them together in a house, and they somehow created something stronger out of what was these two independent parts. That's shalom bayis. So can a guy bring a carbon? So a non-Jew can bring a carbon. What kind of carbon does a non-Jew bring? He brings an ola. Because within every human being are two warring factors. We have a guf, we have a body, and we have a neshama, we have a soul. Intellect, whatever we want to refer to that, but we have the opposite of our physical body, and they are literally at war all the time, because the body is pushing us down, wants us to be involved in all the mundane, material things of the world, and our soul, our neshama, wants to soar up to the shamayim, to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they usually don't go very well together, very hard. The non-Jew can bring a carbon ola. He understands there's a concept called holiness, kedusha in the world. He understands it very well. But when he brings a carbon, type of carbon he brings, it says, here God, this is for you. And I have nothing to do with this. Because holiness is total and complete separation from being involved in the world. It's yours. You can have it. I'm going to never get married. I'm going to live in a monastery, not drink wine. That's not for me. That's not for holiness. And they do that very well. They do it better than we do. That's a form of holiness. And a non-Jew understands that and can do it well. He brings a carbon ola. Not only that, the Gemara says, even if he wants to bring a shlamim, we say, doesn't work. Even if he says, this is a shlamim, every time a non-Jew comes to the base of mikvah with a carbon, we bring it as an ola. A shlamim, carbon shlamim, go to the base of mikdash for a holy experience. You walk in, the entire concept, we're so removed from it, but walking into the base of mikdash, experiencing what it was like to be there with your animal, you're met by the Kohen, the entire process of the smicha, surrounded, you see the miraculous, the fire, it was a mind-numbing experience. And you know what you get after that? A steak dinner. Literally. Do you know what that takes? To be able to go to Yerushalayim, and then you go to the Har HaBayis, and you come with your karbon in front of the Kohen, in the Beis HaMikdash, the whole process, and then you sit down, fresh, geschmack, roasted meat, as good as it gets. It's not simple. That's not simple. A Jew can bring a karbon shalom. Jew understands we have different parts of us. There's the guf, there's the neshama, and we have to figure out a way to make that work together. The guy comes to the base of the mikvah and says, I want to bring a shlamim, I want a steak. And we say, ola. No steaks. You can bring an ola, you can bring as many as you want. The Gemara says, shalmei ha'ovdei kochavim, even when the ovdei kochavim comes and he wants to bring a carbon shlamim, olos. Ibayis eima kra, ibayis eima svara, says the Gemara. I'll tell you a svara, I'll give you a logical reason why, and I can prove it from a pasuk as well. What's the svara? Why is it logical? Libo l'shamayim. Because his heart is indeed aimed towards heaven. We believe that. We know it's true. He is so indeed focused l'shamayim that he can bring the carbon ola. It's not for him. It's not for me. I can't enjoy this. In order for it to be holy, it has to be for you. Where does this concept come from that the Jew takes the steak dinner and makes that holy? That he combines the aspect of his guf and his neshama and can somehow make peace between that. So that, as you know already, that comes from the Torah. The koach of the Torah, the strength, is the ability to live in this world and elevate it. So I want to read you a Gemara that you're, I'm sure, all familiar with. We'll read it in this context. It's a Gemara Masechet Shabbos that talks about Moshe going up to Shemayim to receive the Torah. Amar Rav Shuvim Levi, it's the bottom source on your first side of the sheet. V'shar she'ala Moshe l'maram, amru l'malachai yashares, l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe goes up to Shemayim and the angels stop him. They say, wait a minute, what is this? Who is this person here? Ma yiludisha beinenu. There's a person born of a woman here. A human being up in Shemayim. What's this? Amar lahem l'kabel Torah. What do you mean? He's here to receive the Torah, says Hashem to the angels. Amru lefanach, chamuda genuza, shegenuza lo teisha ameos, v'shivim v'arbedoros, mevakesh litana lebasar v'dam. This most precious of all gifts that's been kept up here, secret up in Shemayim since the beginning of time, you're going to give it to them? To people who go to the bathroom? To people who eat and who sleep? To them? You're giving the Torah this precious gift? Says the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a good taina. That's a good claim. You're right. Moshe knew. What do you have to say to them? What do you have to say to that claim? Omer l'fanav, the bottom line. Ribbono Shel Olam. Torah she'atanosin limaksiv be. Says Moshe, well, what exactly does it say in this Torah that you're planning on giving to me? Says that I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim. Amar lahem l'Mitzrayim yiradatem, l'Farao ishtavadatem. Were you ever slaves? Do you know what it's like to have your freedom taken away from you? Do you know what it's like to be a subject to somebody else's whims and desires? Were you ever that person who was then freed? Did you ever experience that? Torah lama teilucha. What do you need the Torah for? Shuv maksivah lo yelocha Elohim achirim. Now I have any foreign gods. Bein amim atem shruyim shovdim avodas galulim. Have you ever lived in a foreign culture with different values, serving idols, and you had to maintain your moral culture values in that kind of environment? Have you ever had to do that? Have you ever had to be at work surrounded by non-Jews and just listen to the type of talk around the water cooler and not engage in that? Have you ever experienced that? Moshe says to the angels, you don't need the Torah. Shuv maksiv v'zochor shom ha-shabbos l'kodesho. Have you ever had to close up your shop and watch all your competitors continue working? Have you ever had to do that? Have you had to lose business? Have you had to struggle with what that concept of working and then giving it all up? Shuv maksiv v'losisa masa umotan yesh b'neichem. Have you dealt with business? Have you had to struggle with being honest? Kaveres avicha v'esimecha. Have you ever had to struggle honoring your mother or your father? Were you ever a teenager that you knew that your parents knew nothing and you still had to honor them? Did you ever experience that? We did. We all have to go through that. Lo tirzach, lo sinof, lo signal. Says Moshe, kina yesh b'neichem. Do you have jealousy? Do you know what it's like to really be jealous of someone? Like, not just, I wish I had that. No. Really, really be jealous of someone. Yitzhara yesh b'neichem. You don't have any of that. Miyad hodu l'kadosh baruch hu shem Hashem adonenu ma'adir shimcha. Famous Gemara is quoted often. There's much to say about it. But there's one aspect that relates to us, which is the Torah specifically not for the angel who don't struggle with what we struggle with. We have the animal world, that's all goof. We have a angelic world, which is all neshama, spirituality, and we are there in the middle. We got a little bit of both. And what allows us to make peace between that? What allows us to create the type of kedusha that is elevating the body? We call marriage kiddushin. We make kiddush over wine. Sanctity comes from taking the body and elevating it, making it something special, making it something holy, something which the umos ha'olam, they could bring an ola, they could separate themselves from the world and be very holy. But to live in the world and be holy, that's a different task. There's a Gemara, and it talks about how Jews should celebrate Yom Kippur. Should you celebrate Yom Kippur like Yom Kippur, be in shul all day? Should you have meals? What should it look like? And the Gemara says, everybody agrees. When it comes to Shavuos, everybody agrees how it should be celebrated. How do we celebrate Shavuos, says the Gemara? Deva'ina nami lachem. You need a little bit of Hashem, and some lachem to you. A little meal, a little davening, a little learning. There has to be a meal when it comes to Shavuos. That's the one Yom Kippur there's no discussion about. You have to eat on Shavuos. Why? Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. That's the day the Torah was given. When the day the Torah was given, you have to celebrate with food. I could have made an argument the opposite. But the Gemara knows better. On the day the Torah was given, we're given the ability to elevate everything that we do in this world. And therefore, when you celebrate Shavuos, the day the Torah was given, specifically, there's no discussion about it. You must eat, you must celebrate with food. Chatzker Rebbe used to say, I have it on the next sheet, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li, the Pasuk says in Sefer Shemot, Anshei Kodesh, you need to be a holy people to me. Chatzker Rebbe used to say, Anashim Kedoshim, I want you to be holy people. Malachim Yesh Li Harbe. I have a lot of angels, I don't need that. I ask you to be Anshei Kodesh, to be human beings, flesh and blood, with all that goes into that, and be holy at the same time. Anshei Kodesh. And therefore, Bilam responds. Bilam says to the Umas HaOlam, you want to bring a karban? Karban Shlamim? Only the people who received the Torah can bring that karban. Because karbanos are shalom. Karbanos are shalom. What type of shalom? Gemara says shalom. The Kohen gets a little bit, you get a little bit, and then the Mizbeach gets a little bit. To sit and eat with your holy representative, the Kohen, to sit down with him and have a steak dinner with him, with yourself, and while the Mizbeach is still consuming it, who can do such a thing? What kind of people can make that into a holy experience? Only the people who accepted the Torah understand the shalom that goes into karbanos and are capable of bringing it. Okay, that brings us to the next step. With all of that, where is this done? Where do we accomplish this best? Pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, Torah describes the mitzvah of Orla. The mitzvah of Orla is that when you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, the first 3 years that it produces fruit, you're not allowed to eat of the fruit. The fruit is Orla, designated for non-eating, and the fourth year you bring the fruit to Yerushalayim, and then you can enjoy it. But for 3 years, you have the mitzvah of Orla, you can't enjoy the fruit. The Pasuk describes, when it teaches us this halacha, it's in the middle of the second sheet of Baker Yotes Pasuk of Gimel V'chisavo El Ha'aretz. When you get to the land, when it's hatan kol etma achal, and you plant fruit trees, the araltim or loso es piryo, shalo shonim yelochem arelim, lo yeyachel. For 3 years you will leave the fruits as arelim, mitzvah of orla, and you don't eat it. If you were to translate this pasuk into English, it would sound something like this. When you get to Eretz Yisrael and you plant fruit trees, this is what you do with that fruit. The Medrash sees in this pasuk a different way of reading that. Put it in a comma in a little different place. And it reads it as, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, plant fruit trees. Not as the pasuk seems to read, when you get to Eretz Yisrael and you'll plant the fruit tree, then keep the mitzvah of Orla. But when you get to Eretz Yisrael, plant trees. You're obligated. Plant. Even if you get there and it's filled with trees, says the Medrash, plant more. The language of the Medrash is as follows. I'm in the second to last source on the second side. When you get to the land, plant trees. This is that which is written. The Medrash then brings a mashal. Mashal is as follows, very important mashal. Say, mashal in melech sha'amar livnel. This is comparable to a king who says to his prince, say la prakmatia, go out, go make a living already. You've been living here in the palace, living off of my riches, you haven't done anything for yourself, it's time already, no? New? Out! Go make something for yourself, he says to the prince. Amar lo, the prince says, Abba, I'm so afraid. When I go out on the road, there will all be bandits. And on the sea, pirates. I can't go out and make a living for myself. What did his father do? Notel makel, gave him a staff. V'chokoko, and engraved it. V'nosan bo kmiya, and put a little parchment, something written in it. The Nasanul of Noni gave it to his son. Keep this staff in your hands. As long as you walk around with this staff, you don't have to be afraid of anyone. This is what you need. You keep this staff. I understand your fears. Going out there to make a living, it's dangerous out there. You keep the staff with you, and you'll be fine. Af kach omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, emor liYisrael b'ni, osku b'Torah, you learn Torah and you don't have to be afraid of anyone. That's the Medrash. Look back over the top of the Medrash. Say, okay, something interesting here. What's the conversation about here? You get there to Israel, and what do? Plant a tree. That's the pasuk, that's our springboard. When you get to the land, plant trees. Medrash says, oh, this is comparable to a king who said to his son, go earn a living. And the son says, I'm so afraid. The king says, no problem, here's a staff, and you'll be fine. What are Chazal telling us about Eretz Yisrael? Plant trees, you have what to be afraid of, but you have the staff in your hand to protect you. One more Medrash, and we'll tie this all together. Bada Medrash. Pasuk in Iyo says, Mishos v'tuchos chachma, o minasan l'sech v'vina. That's the pasuk in Iyov, which means, who has placed understanding in the innards of a person? O minasan l'sech v'vina, and who has placed under, the first phrase, Mishos v'tuchos chachma, who has placed wisdom in the innards of a person, and who has placed in their mind l'sech v'vina, understanding. So the Medrash takes this pasuk and describes it in the following way. The two words that are used, betuchos, for the innards of a person, and sechvi, for the mind of a person, have alternate meanings. Betuchos also means a chick, like a baby chicken. And sechvi also means a grown chicken, correct. So the Medrash says, that's interesting that the Pasuk in Iyov describes Hashem as placing wisdom, chachma, and bina, and understanding, into baby chicks and grown chicks. And the Medrash says this is comparable to, indeed, a grown chick and its little children, its little chicks. Hadatanagolta, you have a grown mother hen. Kadeth rochea zekikin, when it's young, its chicks are young, it would gather food for the little chicks, the Yehovah's loan, Tachos and Gafia, and it would bring it to them and feed them in the nest. And then the chicks grow up. And then what do grown chicks do when they become their own adult chickens? Well, they do the same thing they did as little children. They go to mommy and they say, feed me! And what does the mommy hen do? Says the Medrash, gives them a slap across the face, kicks them out of the nest and says, go find your own food. So says the Medrash, Kach, kishahoyu Yisrael bamidbar arvoyim shana. The Jewish people spent 40 years in the desert. Haman yored. And they have food falling from heaven at their doorstep. The habe'er olalahen. A well of water would miraculously follow them around wherever they went. They had water. V'haslav, matzulem, meat. V'anone kavon makipososon, surrounded by the clouds of glory, flattening the roads, protecting them from everyone. V'amud anon misayeh lefnehem, and this pillar of smoke traveling before them. Life was gishmak, perfect. It was the ultimate kolel existence. You have your father-in-law providing you with everything. A home, food, water, protection, and you're learning Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen. What could be better? What existence, if you were to craft an existence and say, I'm going to give you an environment that's utopian for the Jewish people, you could not have come up with a better environment than the 40 years in the Midbar, one would have thought. Perfect. No distractions. I don't have to earn a living. I have the greatest teacher that's ever lived. I have my needs provided for. Says the Ribbono Shalom. Kevan shenichnasu Yisrael la'aretz. And then they entered into the land. Amr lehem Moshe, kol echad ve'echad mikem yitun machoshel. You don't have the last line. Go take up your own staff, v'yapuk v'yintuv le'nitzivan. Go build your own houses, plant your vineyards, as the pasuk says, ki savohu el ha'aretz unitatem. When you get to the land, plant. This was a bubble. It was a training ground. It was to teach you how to live, but it's a 40-year bubble leading into when you get to the land. And when you get to the land, then I want you to plant. And you must plant. And if you find it planted, plant again. Because that existence, the existence of the Midbar, as great a training ground as it was not the tachlis sabriya, was not the purpose, was never intended to be. It was supposed to be an 11-day journey until we got to Eretz Yisrael. And in Eretz Yisrael, the Jew fulfills his mission, which is a struggle and a battle between his neshama and his guf, between the mundane, physical pulling him down, and his ability to soar. And his goal is not to separate himself from the world around him, but to elevate, to live with Kedusha in everything that he does, to be able to bring a Karbat Shlom. And the place to do that is Eretz Yisrael. The place to be able to combine the two. Because when you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, as we know, the physical mundane is easy to focus on that. Spiritual is much more difficult. But the place that we were given, that was not supposed to be a place where you would just sit and learn all day. Unitatem. Plant. Plant even if you don't need to plant. Plant. And elevate that planting. So Bilam says to the Umas HaOlam, you can't bring a Karban Shlamim. Only the people that got the Torah, who then live the Torah, are capable
of bringing this type of karba.
The Rosh Hashiva said, go back to the original Medrash.
Balak sees the nation on the cusp of Eretz Yisrael.
And he sees them having lived for 40 years, a holy existence. And he said to himself, that doesn't frighten me.
I can deal with the people like that.
I know holy people like that. People who aren't engaged in the world and have separated themselves and made themselves holy. That's not a problem. You know what is the problem?
When this people enters into the land,
when this people shifts
from the bubble that they exist in now, and they start to plant, and they start to live lives of holiness,
lives that I live, but they're doing it in a different manner. When they're living out in the desert, fine.
But lohem mevakesh balak yalol garshim in ha'aretz lo yichnesu la'aretz.
That element of being able to enter into a land, to sanctify and to live, is what he couldn't tolerate. When a non-Jew today in America sees somebody who's Amish,
what do they say to them?
Very nice, I'm so happy for you that you've chosen to live this lifestyle. Doesn't impact them in any way.
And they see an Orthodox Jew
who doesn't have a horse and buggy, who has nicer clothes than them, and a nicer house, and drives a nicer car, and says, I'm holier than you. That's a different story.
Different story. What do you mean?
If you want to be like my priest, okay, goes into hate, be like my priest. If you want to be like the Amish, be like the Amish. But you want to be my neighbor and still tell me that you're holier than me? That's a difficult task. And that's why we are front page news every day. Because whenever we fail, the entire world is waiting to pounce and say, see, you're not. You're not any holier. You're not any more moral. You're not any better. You're just like us. That's our task, is to be in the world with our businesses and our homes and our cars and our families, and to be anshei kodesh tiyumli, to indeed be the most noble, moral, ethical people around. We're behind the eight ball doing it in Galus. Because the land that was designated for that, the land that allows for that spirituality, the land that allows for a person to work and learn and grow, we have land. We have a home where that's supposed to be. Unetaten, that we plant and that we develop, that's where we were supposed to do it. And Balak had one goal in mind when he saw the Jewish people, and that is stop that people from getting to that land. Because when they get to that land, then they create something that we're supposed to. And therefore his attempts were specifically aimed against that, and that's our task, is to get back there and to accomplish it as best and as great as we can while we're not in the land. But always aiming to be able to be there where we can plant, we can roll up our sleeves, to live, to work the land around us, and to be anshei kodesh, to you and Lee, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I hope it was an easy, meaningful fast to you all. And we should Mirat Hashem get to Eretz Yisrael as quickly as we can, as we begin the period, literally of mourning what we lost, of what could have been, and what should have been.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.